Mr. Cavalli, reel two.
Right. The before continuing with that little story there, I must tell you about one particular episode that happened while we were at Peel, and that was that there was a riot. The riot started because one of the inmates, and I think his name was Pasquale Di Mascio, had escaped. And after being recaptured, he was brought back and punished severely with some sort of solitary confinement and the 3 days' bread and water. And this sort of infuriated the inmates of the camp. And so we started tearing the camp to pieces, you know, ripping off bits of concrete and throwing it at the military headquarters, which were just, you know, which were guarding, who were guarding us.
How could you rip out pieces of concrete?
Oh, quite easy. I mean, so some of the brickwork was loose, wasn't it? And so you threw anything that was going. I was in bed at the time when that happened, and I heard this fracas. So I got up and got out and said, well, what's going on? And then they told me the story. Oh, I said, I see. Well, anyway, I was still in my pyjamas. I didn't do anything. I mean, I just stood there and watched them. And then in the end, everything stopped.
Did you know Pasquale?
Oh, yes. I knew him well, yes. I knew him very well.
What kind of a chap was he?
Very quiet sort of chap. As a matter of fact, he could hardly speak English.
Why do you think he'd attempted to escape?
I don't know. I suppose he wanted freedom. Freedom at all costs.
Because it wouldn't seem very... There'd be much of a chance of getting off the island.
No chance at all. I don't know what he had in mind. Mind you, he was, let's put it this way, not scatty, but a bit scatterbrained, you know.
Was he a Londoner?
Yes, a London Italian. He could, as I say, he could hardly speak English. I used to write his letters for him.
Do you know the month
I can't remember that.
Or the season?
It was winter time. Oh, it was winter time.
So early 1941, probably.
Yes. Or late 1941. I was just before Christmas, I think. We'd been there some time.
And had you known about the conditions under which Pasquale Di Mascio...
Oh, yes, well, there's always ways of finding out. There's always ways of finding out, and as I say, that was the reaction of the inmates.
And were there very bad conditions he was being kept under?
Well, you could imagine, solitary confinement and 3 days' bread and water. I mean, it's it's not a joke. I mean, it happened to one of our inmates also in Brixton Prison, who... gave the warder, or whatever you call him, a bit of lip, and he was punished with 3 days' bread and water, and they even took his bed away. Just slept on a wooden bench there, you see. But we managed to pass him food just the same.
Did you get food to Pasquale?
Not that I know of, no, because he was put outside the compound. He wasn't left inside the compound where we were, outside. Where the military were. The result of this riot eventually was that the military were replaced by London police. The police came up there and took over. And as I say, we got on very well with the police.
Better than with the soldiers?
Oh, yes. Although we had no complaints with the soldiers, I mean, but the police were more, shall we say, friendly, you know, the London bobby.
Did you know any of them?
No, I didn't, no. Although there was, my father had quite a few bobbies in his shop, but I never recognised anybody there that used to come in my father's shop.
In that riot, had anybody been injured?
No, nobody. Nobody was injured. Because the military just stood there, and they did nothing. They just did nothing. They just waited for the riot to die out, and that was it. Because you couldn't get out of the camp because of the barbed wire. Obviously.
So they just waited out of range of the bricks.
Exactly.
Was there much damage done?
I think there was a bit of damage done, yes, especially to the houses where we were in, you know, because, I mean, you start ripping out bits of concrete and brickwork and things like that, anything you could lay your hands on, And of course, they were all aimed at the military headquarters, a lovely hotel they had there. And, windows were smashed and things like that.
Was the damage made good?
I should imagine so. I don't know who paid for it.
I mean, were the quarters repaired?
Oh, yes, it must have been. It couldn't stay like that, not with that Atlantic wind there. Good gracious me. It was a very cold camp, I tell you that.
What type of things did you do to pass the time?
Well, now, talking for myself, I think I learned every card game under the sun. Bridge, poker, anything, rummy, everything, you know. Then we had our sports days, you know, where we used to, have a go in athletics, high jumping, things like that. And also we had a football pitch. And every day there was a football match on, of some sort. Food-wise, we were, quite happy with what we got. Because you've got to remember that amongst these Italians, you've got some high-class chefs. And they could make a meal out of nothing. And we never went short of food at all. I think we were better off than the people outside.
Were you in regular contact with your relations and friends?
By letter. Oh, yes, by letter. You couldn't telephone or anything like that. No.
Was it adequate, the amount of contact you had?
Well, you were allowed one letter a week. Quite enough, really, because after a while, I mean, you're only repeating things, you know, that you keep saying week after week.
And parcels? Could you get?
You were allowed parcels, yes. Oh, yes. Although my mother wasn't in a position to send me anything because she was only a working woman. But, as I say, we all had little jobs up in the camp, you know, for which you got paid a modest fee, but that used to pay for either your cigarettes or your bar of chocolate or whatever you wanted to buy.
What kind of jobs?
Office jobs. I was in Peel. I was in charge of the blackout. I was putting up blackout curtains. And I even, for one period, one short period, I was allowed outside the compound to put the blackout curtains up in the military quarters. You know, that was quite something, outside.
So did that show a degree of trust in you?
Well, let's face it, what could you do there? I mean, where could you go? I mean, you had no money in your pocket to start with. What could you do? Unless you had somebody on the outside.
Did you have any further appearances before a tribunal?
No. No further appearances, not up to Peel. I should come to that later at any rate, when the war ended.
Yes.
But as I say, in the meanwhile, all these applications started going forward to the Home Office. Can we join our fathers? And then our fathers were saying, can we have our sons with us and all the rest of it? And eventually they agreed. And so in 1942, I finally joined my father at the Onken internment camp. O camp it was called.
Onken?
Onken. O-N-C-H-A-N. Onken internment camp.
Is this in the Isle of Man?
In the Isle of Man, yes. That was on the same side as Douglas, the capital of the Isle of Man.
Was this any better?
Oh, yes. Oh, infinitely better. The houses were smaller. So instead of having, say, about 50 or 60 in a house, you only had 30.
So it must have made a big difference to you, being with your father.
Oh, absolutely, yes. It's, at least you're with your own kith and kin. And, he didn't know what had happened, you know, and so I spent many evenings with him telling him what happened to me and all the rest of it, and he told me the same about himself.
What was he able to tell you about his own experiences?
Well, as far as he was concerned, he didn't do too badly. The only bad period of his internment was when they were all mustered together at Bury, at Wharf Mills, which was a dilapidated cotton mill. where rats were scuttling about all over the place. But it was only, as I say, a transit camp where they stayed for about a week, I think it was. And eventually they were shipped off to the Isle of Man.
Had your father run into any unpleasant people in charge of him?
Not that he said anything about it, anyway. Not to me.
So you were saying that Unken camp was a lot better?
Oh, it was the best camp of the lot. Definitely. We had we had every facility going there. We had a lovely canteen where you could buy things. You know, it was well organised in the sense that it was like a mini village. You had people in charge of like a mini post office where you could buy your stamps and correspondence, literature and things like that. You had a bank, a mini bank, where you could, you know, draw money and things like that. And as I say, the canteen was an excellent canteen. And, of course, all the other usual facilities, sports ground. It was a vast complex. It was about twice the size of Wembley Stadium. So, I mean, it housed about 1,500 of us all together there. Food, excellent. I mean, Italian chefs ate very well. And the military were quite good as well. The last camp commander that was there, Major Allport, an absolute gentleman. He used to call us his Italian friends, not enemies, his Italian friends. And he used to come and walk into camp every day, saluting everybody, you know, always with a nice smile on his face.
What was his name?
Major Allport, Allport.
Could you make representations to him about things you were dissatisfied with?
Well, that was all done through the camp leader, who at that time there was a Professor Bernabeau, Bernabo.
What kind of a chap was he?
Very intellectual, very meek sort of fellow, you know, but quite efficient. But soon after our arrival there, he thought it was time that he should resign.
Why do you think that
because
was?
Because he'd been a camp leader had a lot of headaches up there. You know, I mean, he was like the father figure in there. People used to go up to him, tell him all their troubles, you know, family troubles and things like that. And I suppose he'd had enough. So they decided to elect a new camp leader, which was my father. He became camp leader in 1942. And he stayed there until the camp was closed in March 1944.
So your father got all the headaches?
Yes, but my father was he was used to headaches. It didn't bother him. He was... He was one of those sort of fellas, you know, that could take anything into his stride. He was really good at that. And he got on very well with the military, very well. I mean, if ever he asked them for anything, he got it.
But presumably there was very little your father could do about all the family problems that people were bringing to him.
Oh, no. He did a lot of things. First of all, he contacted the Italian aid... Italian Internees Aid Society, and he got on very friendly terms with the secretary, Miss Daly, who really put herself out. I mean, some of these families, they were in really dire straits as a result of their man being interned, and she really put herself out to help them, and she got a lot of benefits for them as well.
Was she able to do anything for your mother?
No, well, my mother wasn't in that sort of dire condition, you know, that required any sort of assistance. She just worked, and that was it.
Any other members of the Italian Internees Aid Society you remember as having done good work?
No, that was the only one, Miss Daly. I suppose the others on the committee were the same, but I can't remember their names, but I've got all the documents at home. but she was the one, definitely. As a matter of fact, I think at the end of the war, you know, Italians always like to honour people that have done good work for their nationals. She was, I don't know, they put forward the suggestion that they should honour her with some sort of grade or something, you know, like a cavaliere, what they call them here. But whether she got it or not, I don't know. But she was definitely a magnificent lady, I can tell you that.
And she came into Onken camp, did she?
No, she never came to Onken camp. Everything was done by correspondence. I don't remember her ever coming up there, but I know she was... the amount of correspondence that there was between her, my father and her, was phenomenal. I mean, she really was, a magnificent lady.
Were there any other escape attempts after Pasquale had attempted it?
From our camp? I don't know. I don't think so. Not really. We, there are two or three little episodes I can tell you about up there. Once the, in Onken, once the canteen was burnt down. I don't know why, but someone took it into his head that they should burn it, and they did burn it. But why, I don't know. Found the culprit in the end, and they punished him.
How did they punish him?
They punished him by taking away all his privileges. You know, no letter writing, no money, just nothing.
What did the others think about the burning down of the canteen?
Oh, it was terrible. Terrible. I can't remember exactly why they did that. Something must have been going on that, you know, that upset them or something. And this individual, he decided he would, burn it down. I think his name was Radice. Radice. He was the culprit.
So it was some kind of protest?
There was some sort. Of some sort. I don't remember, you know, really. Remember, I was only a young man up there, so I didn't have a care in the world, you know. I wasn't worried about those sort of things. And one of the first, the other episodes was these people who died up there in the camp. There was one particular case where... because the doctor arrived very late, the fellow had a heart attack and he died. And, you know, after that, we made sure that we had a doctor available at any time. That was a most distressing case, that was.
Did you see it?
Oh, well, I knew the man. I knew who he was. And when I came out of the camp... I met his son in London and told him of the circumstances of his father's death. And my father and I, together, we drafted out a letter pointing out what happened and gave it to him so that he could keep it as a record, you know. Altogether, up there, I think there was about six of them that died during internment there. It was one case of suicide. Other... silly little episodes up there. They caught someone making a still, you know, they were making whiskey and things like that. Things they got up to.
Were you involved in that?
No. I wasn't a drinker at any rate, not at that age. Didn't know anything about drinking.
Were you allowed alcohol?
Wine, yes. Oh, yes. You could have wine. No spirits. Oh, no.
Where did you get the wine from?
Oh, well, it was sent in. You could have it sent in.
As gifts?
Oh, yeah. I think some of them used to buy it as well because it was on sale in the canteens. beer. We had plenty of beer up there. We had a couple of little little rooms that we turned into public houses, you know. We used to go in there. And, of course, all the flash Italians, those with plenty of money who had businesses going while they were in turn, were treating everybody, you know, drinks all on me, drinks all on... Oh, all right, carry on. So you just drank. Amazing.
Could you have any contact with local people?
No, not really. At first, I don't think they liked us. But then they saw that by having us there, they were getting a certain amount of revenue from the government. And also the fact that all the visitors were coming to the Isle of Man to see their loved ones, all up in hotels, spending money. So in the end, they sort of accepted us.
But at first, were they unpleasant?
Well, they looked upon us as if we were caged animals, you know, because they could walk in front of your camp, especially on the seafront, you know, and they could see you inside there.
Was there any taunting?
Not that I remember. Not that I remember.
Why do you think the chap committed suicide?
Who knows?
Did you know him?
No, I didn't know him at all.
In these camps, like Heighton, Peel and Onken, was it just Italians in them or other nationalities?
No, Onken, only Italians. The others, a mixture.
Was there any mixing between the nationalities in Peel and Heighton?
Oh, yes, while you were there, you sort of made friends with everybody.
So there were no national animosities?
No. I remember, while we're on the subject of Peel, I remember the camp leader's name at Peel. He was Squadron Leader Finlay. Now then, why he was put inside, I don't know. I suppose he had some German friendship or something. He belonged to some German friendship society or something. But he was our camp leader.
How effective was he as a camp leader?
Well, he was quite efficient. But I don't think he had any control over that riot.
Now, how did things develop as the years went on in Onken for you?
Well, with myself, as I was still fresh from school, as you might say, because, you know, I was studying and I only had another couple of years to go before I could have been admitted to university, because it was my father's intention to give me an A1 education. And so I decided to study. Keep studying. I could see that this war was going to go on for some time. Yeah, I thought, better not lose any time. Let's, you know, get cracking. So we had some excellent teachers up there. I didn't need any instruction in Italian, English or French because I was okay there. Where I needed a lot of instruction was mathematics. And so I had a professor there who taught mathematics in some university in Scotland. And he put me through my paces. And eventually, I was ready to sit for an examination.
Did you have to pay him?
No. No, 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 no. Now the
were you part of a group that he was teaching?
Three of us, there were. I decided, eventually, to sit for the what was then called the matriculation examination. Five subjects. English and maths were compulsory. And the other three, you could choose what you like. So I chose Italian, French, and then I thought to myself, now, what should I pick as the fifth subject? Oh, my pet subject, Roman history. I didn't swat up much on it. And so I went for the exam.
Onken?
No, Douglas, Isle of Man. Went with a military escort, you know, a soldier came with me. He had no bayonet, no gun, nothing, so that's how much they trusted us. And he took me there, and there was a few other internees from other camps sitting down, you know. And the first examination was English, no trouble there. You were allowed 3 hours to complete the paper. I did it in about an hour and a quarter, something like that. Second one was mathematics. Now, that one was a stiff one. that really was stiff. The examination paper was divided into three sections: mathematics, algebra, geometry and trigonometry. Well, it took me the whole 3 hours to do that paper, but I did it. Then the Italian paper came up, well, that was a joke for me, so I mean, I finished that in an hour, no trouble at all. The English, French, oh, the French paper took me a bit longer, but I've completed that within the 3 hours. When the Roman history test paper came up, I was absolutely flummoxed. I was taken aback at the questions that they were reeling, that they were put down there, and I failed. See, if I could have four subjects out of five, excellent. But the fifth subject let me down. You had to pass in all five. And that's when I sort of despaired. I said, well, I'll give it up now. I can't do any more. And I stopped studying after that.
So you were with other candidates taking the exam?
Oh, yes, yes.
From the internment camp?
From other internment camps, yeah. I was the only one from my camp that took the exam. The other two who were studying with me decided against it.
During this time, were you following the course of the war? Were you taking any interest
in
the battles?
Oh, yes, we were. You know, you're looking at it, I says, oh, yes, it's, oh, dear me, nothing seems to be happening here, so it's stalemate here. What's going on down there? It was only when the Allies started clearing up North Africa and then going into it that we knew it was just a question of time then.
How did you feel at that time when that was happening, as far as your divided loyalties were concerned?
Yeah, it's difficult to say. Difficult to say. We were sorry in many ways that the country, our second country, was going to be devastated. But at the same time, you had the pleasure of knowing that you were getting rid of those Germans, you know, because they're the ones that were disliked more than anything else. I mean, when you hear some of the things that they did in Italy, especially up in the villages where my father and mother come from, whew, you know, it's...
So, what I think you were actually released in 44.
I was released at the end of February 1944, but before then, I was called up before MI5 in Onchan, and... Well, let me go back a bit before that. 1943, the armistice, right? And immediately they started releasing in quantities. And I thought my turn would never come because all my friends were going, you know. And I said, well, what am I staying here for, you know? And then all of a sudden I was told the night before, pack your bags, you're going home. I said, oh, thank you very much. And I was taken under escort to Liverpool, consigned over to the police, who gave me my release papers. And from there I travelled back down to London. I had nowhere to go because my father and my mother was, what you call it, was staying with friends out in Cheam, Surrey. Our home had been bombed while we were away. And so I went to stay there for a while.
Where was your father?
My father was still inside. He didn't come out till a month.